Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Today is Thursday, June 16th, 2022. A quick preview of today's docket. First, Amber Heard was called a liar, liar, pants on fire by a juror who didn't like her attacks on the jury. Authorities are still looking for a fugitive yoga instructor. I told Kevin Spacey not to go. He went anyway. The sentencing memorandum are in on Ghislaine Maxwell, and not surprisingly, some big disagreements regarding the appropriate sentence. An example of after deliberation, apparently on video, and then dumb criminal of the day. You may actually feel sorry for him. Let's talk about it. Let's officially open the record for today's docket. First, liar, liar, pants on fire. That is what a juror has said regarding Amber Heard's comments. And, well, one of the jurors that was actually on Amber Heard's jury says, hey, it's not like she said it was. First, the juror spoke anonymously to Good Morning America and slammed Ms. Heard's recent claims. The male juror said that he and other jurors were uncomfortable with how Heard stared at them throughout the trial, and that they struggled to believe her when she went from crying to being completely ice cold. He also denied Heard's claim that the trial was unfair because of social media. The juror said three of the five jurors don't even have Facebook or Twitter accounts. Now, Heard has repeatedly suggested that Depp only won the trial because he is more famous and more likable than she is. However, the juror said they reached their verdict based upon the evidence in the case. The juror said that the crying, the facial expressions, and the staring at the jury made them really uncomfortable. A lot of her story just didn't add up, the juror stated, and the majority of the jury felt that she was the aggressor. The juror even said some jury used the expression crocodile tears. The juror also went on to say that one of the turning points in the trial was Heard's admission that she had not donated her $7 million divorce settlement to charity, as she had claimed, and she had stated publicly that she had in fact done so. He called it a fiasco and added that while Depp's legal team was sharp, Heard had sharp elbows and came off as abrasive. The juror stated she goes on that talk show in the UK. The video shows her sitting there telling the host that she gave all that money away. And the term she used as video clip was, I gave it away. I donated it and it's gone. But she didn't give much of it away at all, as the juror noted. And the juror also said, what I think is true is that they were abusive towards each other. I don't think that makes either of them right or wrong, but to rise to the level of what she was claiming, there wasn't enough evidence that supported what she was saying. So a couple observations. Obviously, when a defendant or a plaintiff or a criminal defendant in a criminal case go to court, one of the most important things you have to do is look likable. You're going to be sitting there most of the time. And if you start staring down the jury, guess what? You're going to make them uncomfortable. And you have to be nice. And you can't just be nice when you need to be nice. You have to look like a nice person all of the time. And when you're in trial for 6 weeks, you are not going to be able to pretend to be nice if you're not a nice person that entire time. And the biggest thing, jurors can understand mistakes, okay? They can live with that where mistakes are made, but the jury will punish liars. I've seen that in trial many, many times. And in a criminal defense case, when the jurors believe that the police were lying or that the prosecution was somehow trying to get something over on the jurors, and that goes for the defense as well, they will punish liars. And that's what the juror basically told Amber Heard. Your story didn't make sense. You lied to us. Why should we believe you? We'll see if more jurors come forward and defend the fellow jurors. Quick reminder, like the video if you do, subscribe if you haven't, and as always, leave me a comment below about what we talk about here today. And don't forget to hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. Like many Americans, we got a dog during the pandemic. My quarantine dog, Miss Winnie the Bulldog. Now, Miss Winnie has grown accustomed to being around us all the time,
When we were leaving the house, Winnie would have extreme anxiety, so we decided to look for natural products to help with her anxiety. We looked for the highest quality CBD treats, and we were not satisfied, and neither was Winnie. So we created a high quality CBD product that absorbs faster and provides the required results faster. Baked in Colorado, CBD treats and beverage enhancers are made with nanotechnology. The nanotechnology makes the CBD extraction more pure, also allows for Baked in Colorado products to work faster. Baked in Colorado products can help reduce your pet's anxiety, ease joint pain, and help with your dog's skin problems. Go to our online store and see what Baked in Colorado product is best for your dog. When you order at bakedincolorado.com, enter code Winnie and receive 15% off your first order. We have a 30-day money-back guarantee. If your dog does not experience the desired results in 30 days, return the product and we will refund your money. No questions asked.
Next, a fugitive yoga teacher. That's right, Caitlin Armstrong is still on the run after allegedly killing cyclist Mariah Mo Wilson after she was found dead in her apartment in Austin, Texas on May 11th, shortly after swimming with Armstrong's boyfriend, a guy by the name of Colin Strickland. The yoga teacher was allegedly seen at a remote New York State campsite where her sister was allegedly staying, and a man staying at the Camp Haven campground in Manor, New York, said that Armstrong's sister, Christine, had been staying there and that he saw Armstrong about a month ago. Now, former FBI agent Tracy Walder believes Armstrong could be using an alias, and a private investigators are receiving tips that she might be using her sister's name. The camp address is nearly 2.5 hours away from Newark Liberty International Airport, where Armstrong was last seen on May 18th. Now, a police tipster who didn't want to be identified told investigators that Armstrong flew into a rage upon discovering cyclist Strickland's romance with fellow cyclist Wilson back in January of 2022. Armstrong told the caller that she was so angry that she wanted to kill Wilson. That, ladies and gentlemen, if there's a trial and probable cause is found, guess what? That is an admission against a party opponent. It's coming in. That tipster contacted cops on May 14th, 3 days after Wilson's murder, and Armstrong was questioned by cops and then released. The 34-year-old suspect then vanished and has been on the run ever since. Private investigators believe Caitlin is using her sister's name and flees to Canada via the Roxham Road in upstate New York, a familiar spot where asylum seekers cross into the United States from Canada. Officials have not yet confirmed this theory, but I'm sure they are looking into it. Kevin. That's right, Kevin Spacey. I told Kevin not to go. But no one ever listens to the attorney. They always know better, right? Well, Kevin Spacey said he vows to establish his innocence over allegations that he has sexually assaulted 3 men over 8 years on visits to Britain. And the Oscar-winning star, who's now 62, smiled as he exited the silver Mercedes and was ushered into the Westminster Magistrates Court by 2 police officers and his legal team, obviously. Now, during the hearing, Spacey occasionally would glance towards the packed press bench and a full public gallery, which lasted 28 minutes and spoke only to confirm his name and date of birth. He was granted unconditional bail, meaning that he is free to fly back home to the United States ahead of his preliminary hearing at the Southwark Crown Court on July 14th. Now, Spacey's attorney, a guy by the name of Patrick Gibbs, said that his client strenuously denies the allegations and has returned voluntarily to the United Kingdom to establish his innocence. The court heard that Spacey went through 4 days of interviewing in New York and promised that if he was charged, he would come to Britain to answer them. Spacey made no comments outside of the courthouse, and he was rushed past other court attendees. Prosecutors Natalie Dawson did not give any further details on the allegations beyond what the charges were when they were read aloud by the court's legal advisor. The charges are 2 counts of sexual assault on a man who is now in his 40s, back in March of 2005 in London, sexual assault on a man who is now in his 30s and causing him to engage in penetrative sexual activity without consent in August of 2008 in London, and sexual assault on a man who is now in his 30s in April of 2013. Now, listen, Kevin Spacey wants to prove his innocence. I get that. But guess what? He already is innocent, all right? He apparently gave a four-hour interview to investigators, and they still decided to charge him. Does he really think he's going to be able to add something different at this point to clear his good name? Okay, charges are out there. Guess what? Don't go to England, and you wouldn't be arrested. But he goes voluntarily. Now, I get it. You want to clear your name. But guess what? Your name is clear unless you're found guilty. And then what? All he had to do was avoid England, never would have been charged, and that would be it. Now, no one ever listens to their attorney, just like some people oftentimes will contact an attorney and say, hey, I have a warrant in a particular state. Well, if you go to that state, guess what? You're subject to arrest. If you want to get arrested, you should go to that state. Better yet, go turn yourself in. Well, that's going to be really inconvenient, and I could get arrested, and I could be convicted and go to prison. Exactly. Exactly. Now, I hope, and I obviously give Mr. Spacey the presumption of innocence, and I hope things turn out well for him. But if they don't, that's right. Yours truly will be saying, hey, Kevin, I told you don't go. All right. If you want to listen to Crime Talk on the go, we are available on all the podcasting apps. Leave me a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. That would be great. We appreciate it for sure. All right, Ghislaine Maxwell, the sentencing memorandums have been filed. And not surprisingly, Ghislaine Maxwell's attorneys also asked for a sentence below the 240 months. And for those of you who are quick with math like me, that's 20 years. That's right, the 20-year sentence recommended by the probation department, the people that prepare the pre-sentence investigation report for the court. The attorneys for Ghislaine also asked United States District Court Judge Allison Nathan to order a prison term that was well below the 292 to 365 months. Once again, for those of you quick with math, that's 24.3 years to 30.4 years in prison, recommended under one set of the federal sentencing guidelines. Now, the memo generally sought to lessen the sentencing, but did not contain a solid numerical articulation of Ghislaine Maxwell's request. Not uncommon, ladies and gentlemen. In a sentencing memorandum, you want the judge to go as low as possible. And why do you want to lock them into a number when maybe the judge thinks it should go lower? Just something to think about. Instead, it was a full bunch of generalized proposals, and in a separate document, Ghislaine's attorneys asserted that their client's properly calculated sentencing guideline range was somewhere between 51 and 63 months, which is about 4.5 to 5 years for the sentence. That significantly reduced calculation, the defense wrote, was based upon a 2003 federal sentencing guideline and not the latest version. Remember, most of these allegations took place back in the early 2000s. Hence the reason why the defense has reasoned that the 2003 guideline applied, because much of the offense occurred in allegedly 2004, where the guidelines were promulgated, citing an ex post facto argument under the United States Constitution and Supreme Court case law in support of those claims. And that makes sense, ladies and gentlemen. I had a cold case homicide that was some 20 years old, and guess what? We had to go back to the statute books some 20 years ago for the elements, just make sure it was charged properly, as well as the sentencing scheme that was in place at the time of the offense, not as it is today. So in this particular case for Ghislaine Maxwell, the opening salvo of the 77-page sentencing memorandum, which includes copious attestations as to Maxwell's good character by her friends and relatives, and they sought to distance Ghislaine from that man named Jeff that she was so close with for so many, many years. The memo also claims Ghislaine's life had been ruined and that her life has been threatened while she has been behind bars. And the attorneys mentioned that an inmate once bragged about being offered money to kill Ghislaine. A few lines reminded the court that Maxwell was not a stand-in for the man named Jeff. The memo concludes in part by saying that Maxwell is not an heiress, villain, or vapid socialite, but someone who has worked hard her entire life. Maxwell's sentencing is set for June 28th. We'll be watching, and we'll let you know how that comes out. We'll see if it's 5 years or 25 years. Place your bets now. place your bets. All right, case here in Colorado. A 28-year-old Joshua Johnson has been charged with first-degree murder in the death of his coworker, who was 17 years old and was named Riley Whitelaw. This took place in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Now, a Walgreens store manager found Whitelaw's bloody body in the store's break room on June 11th. Whitelaw had suffered significant trauma to her neck area, according to police reports, and there was a large amount of blood on the floor around the head of the victim. Now, on the day of the killing, Johnson was caught on surveillance video stacking bins in front of the video cameras to block its view and to tape paper over windows. Another manager said that while they were looking for Whitelaw, she checked outside by a dumpster and smelled a strong odor of bleach, according to the police affidavits. Now, the state police later stopped Mr. Johnson as he was walking along Interstate 25, where he was found with scratches on his face and hands. He initially told police that he had been attacked at the Walgreens and that he fell in the blood and then went home to change. Well, later he changed his story and he admitted to having a crush on the 17-year-old Riley. And he stated he no longer had a crush on her because he was allegedly intimate with one of the other store managers. Now, this manager did not mention the relationship during their interview with police, apparently. And one of the managers said that the teenage girl requested a different schedule so that she would avoid working with Johnson. According to police reports, another manager said that Johnson showed signs of jealousy when Riley's boyfriend started working at the store as well. All right, and next, a bonus story. John Hinckley Jr., free at last. That's right. The man who tried to assassinate President Ronald Reagan is officially a free man. And in a social media statement, Mr. Hinckley, now 67, revealed that he was released fully from the court's restrictions. He sent out a tweet, "After 41 years, 2 months, and 15 days, freedom at last." Now, Mr. Hinckley shot President Ronald Reagan, as well as White House Press Secretary James Brady, a Secret Service agent, and a police officer in front of the Washington, D.C. hotel on March 30th of 1981. I don't know about you, but I can tell you exactly where I was when that took place and when it happened, and still remembering, wow, this kind of stuff really happens. Mr. Hinckley's goal in the assassination was that he hoped that this would impress the actress Jodie Foster, with whom he had an obsessive infatuation. A year later, he was not guilty because of insanity and subsequently spent decades, obviously, in treatment at the St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Washington, D.C. He remained in psychiatric care until 2016, when the judge overseeing his case approved his release with restrictions, including mandatory therapy and treatment by doctors, administering and monitoring his psychiatric medications. Ultimately, United States District Court Judge Paul L. Friedman confirmed earlier this month the order for Hinckley's full release would take effect on June 15th. The judge first announced the decision in September of 2021 on the condition that he would continue to display good behavior in the community in Virginia, where he'd been living with his family in recent years under several dozens restrictions. The would-be assassin was psychologically disturbed when he came very close to killing the president, but the judge remarked that Hinckley was now healthy without any mental health issues for 4 decades. Hinckley also has not exhibited any violent behavior or interest in weapons whatsoever. We'll see how things work out for Mr. Hinckley. Apparently, he's got his own YouTube show. That's one way to get a few subscribers, apparently. Go to the mental health hospital for 40 years and get out and be famous, I guess. All right, our dumb criminal of the day. You may actually feel sorry for this guy. School bus driver Jinwan Chen is charged with 38 counts of reckless endangerment after blacking out behind the steering wheel while snacking on some gummies that he says he didn't know were infused with THC. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, the stuff that gets people high in marijuana, not the straight CBD stuff, which takes out all the THC, infused with THC. Well, Mr. Chen was driving 38 passengers from the Mohegan Sun Casino in Connecticut on March 13th when he stopped the bus on the side of Interstate 95. Police said they found Chen slumped unconscious in the driver's seat next to an open package of Smokies Edibles, cannabis-infused fruit chews. Now, Chen's manager said he's been a driver for the Go-Go Sun Tour bus company for at least 10 years and has an exemplary record. He also said he doesn't smoke or drink, but he's known to have a bit of a sweet tooth. So Mr. Chen is being held in custody on a $25,000 bond, and his next court date is set for August 25th. Be careful, ladies and gentlemen. Read the labels. Read the labels. We've had lots of people here in Colorado have to go to the emergency room because they consumed too many edibles. A lot of gummies. I wonder if it kind of came on slowly or hit them all at once. Anyway. All right, let's go ahead and close the docket for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Remember, you can listen to Crime Talk anytime while you're on the go by listening to any of your favorite podcasting apps. That includes Audible, iHeartRadio, Apple, and Spotify. Thank you for watching. Have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.